It's Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins this afternoon, and we're talking with Cecil Harvell of Harvell and Collins, and I do want to remind you that website, Harvell and A&D Collins, and with that, Cecil, good afternoon to you. Thanks for joining us.
Good afternoon, Lockwood. It's good to talk to you.
Thank you. What is our topic today?
Sure. Last week, Lockwood, you and me kind of discussed some of the, if you will, mysteries concerning probate. It's a very misunderstood concept. Part of the misunderstanding comes from the fact that probate, Lockwood, is so very different from state to state to state. Mm-hmm. So it is absolutely a fact that probate in the state of New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, California, can be a nightmare. Mm-hmm. But we do not live in those states. We live in North Carolina.
Right.
And in North Carolina, probate, due to the good North Carolina legislature, has been greatly simplified and is basically a process that we do not need to be too terribly anxious about. In fact, we do not create in our office, Lockwood, some of our listeners will recognize these words, the famous living trust. We do not create that document in our office for the singular or sole purpose of avoiding probate. It's just simply not necessary. Now, I am a trust lawyer, and I do a lot of trust work. And I create a lot of trust every day to the work week, and I enjoy it immensely.
Mm-hmm.
But I need something to hang my hat on to create a trust for a client and to charge them for the work that goes into a trust agreement. I need something to hang my hat on other than the, well, let's avoid probate.
Right.
Because North Carolina, again, is a friendly probate state. Now, probate is the changing of title to assets when someone dies.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, many assets do not even pass through probate, Lockwood. If a home is owned between a husband and a wife, then it's tenants by entirety, and it automatically passes to the surviving spouse. If a bank account is owned with a joint tenant, it passes to the surviving joint tenant. An IRA, an individual retirement account, Roth IRA, an annuity, life insurance. So many of these assets pass by beneficiary designation, and so they aren't even in the probate estate. They are passing outside of the probate estate. We need to talk about those things because we don't want a beneficiary designation form, you know, to be terribly inconsistent with what mm-hmm. our intention is when we die. In other words, we don't want a client to say, well, I have three children and I want everything to go three ways. And yet at the bank, I had this happen yesterday, the wonderful gentleman has a $300,000 money market account, but it's joint with one of the children.
Right. Yeah.
And so that is a problem. Now, you know, maybe the child who were to inherit that big account would then split it with his brother and sister, but then again, maybe not.
Mm-hmm.
And what if that brother or sister, the one that owns the account, what if they aren't living? Or what if there are issues in their family with their spouse?
Right.
Things of that nature. So we do review with the client these, quote, non-probate assets, Lockwood, things like annuities, life insurance, retirement accounts, so as to dovetail and coordinate them with what a last will and testament would say. But again, the actual process of changing the title to those assets is not going to be through the probate format. It's going to be because that's the way that we designated it while we were of sound mind how we wanted it to pass. One other thing that's very important that is very distinguishable, North Carolina does not have a sliding scale probate cost such as New York or Pennsylvania, Michigan, New Jersey, those states. It can really cost tens of thousands, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $60,000 to have assets pass through the probate process. In North Carolina, there is a maximum charge, absolute maximum, of $6,000. Most estates don't even trigger that number. They might trigger $1,500, $750, $950, $1,200, but the maximum is $6,000. When I tell that to my friends who practice in Philadelphia or in, in New York, they're just astonished because that number is just enormous in those states. And so in those states, clients, of course, hasten to create a trust agreement and transfer their assets into it to avoid that cost. And that makes perfect sense. But again, we don't live in those states, and we need to apply the law of North Carolina to each and every file that we handle.
You know, it sounds to me, Cecil, that obviously North Carolina recognizes the factor of not only convenience but simplicity. I do have one quick question related to the issue of joint ownership of an asset, and I tenants in entirety. I'm going to use that description. I got to be careful. I'm not trying to practice law, but you know, I'd rather you do that. The issue of the beneficiaries. If there, let's just say, for example, husband and wife, the husband dies, the wife is left with the family estate or the family, estate. First question: does the original, or does the husband's name get, does it get changed? Does the title change so that just her name shows up? And then in the process, then do you sit down with the successor of the assets and walk them through a procedure? Okay, because we recognize not everyone lives forever. I'm trying, but I don't know that it's going to work. The fact that you now have to walk through your clients through the process. Okay, we now have to add or make adjustments in your estate. How does that go? How do you go about that to, again, simplify this whole issue of probate?
Well, you bring up a great point, and we absolutely do that. So, for instance, Lockwood, when we're given the opportunity to review an estate with a client, let's say that we're just dotting some I's and crossing some T's for someone, and because the estate is very straightforward, and they have handled it beautifully, and they really haven't needed to retain a lawyer. Now, we're very busy. A lot of estates do need a lawyer, and we're here to help in those files. But what you're mentioning is that absolutely a good lawyer is going to pause and take the time to review the matters of the, and what is known in the law as, the second to die. Yes, an estate might pass to a surviving spouse, the house, the land, the bank accounts, the IRAs, the stock accounts, all of this, with the money market account, even the automobile, all of this stuff passes to the surviving spouse because, after all, it was joint with the surviving spouse. The folks have been married for 50-plus years, okay? But then all of a sudden I have the widow or widower in the office, and that's a whole nother question, isn't it? And that's what you're talking about, Lockwood. Well, Mrs. Jones, now what do we do?
Right.
Because Mr. Jones is no longer with us. The home is not tenants by entirety. The accounts at the bank are not joint with your husband. And so we need to discuss now what we're going to do. And we do that. We follow through absolutely with the planning of the surviving spouse in each and every file that, you know, we touch and handle. Absolutely. That is a critical component of helping someone get their spouse's affairs settled and then we move to getting their affairs in order. Even their documents, Lockwood, that they may have that might even be fairly current, say they're done within the last 5 or 7 years, they're going to first name each other.
Right.
You see, John is going to name Mary, and Mary's going to name John. Well, if there is no John anymore, now who is going to be the power of attorney? Who's going to be the executor? Who's going to be the health care agent? And all of these things need to be looked at many times, and they need to be updated.
We're talking with Cecil Harvell about the mystery of probate. And Cecil, and of course, I do want to remind you, if you have questions, call their office. It's Cecil Harvell, Harvell and Collins. And that number, by the way, 252 area code 726-9050, 726-9050. Cecil, I want to get back to that topic of second to die here in a moment. And again, remind you, this is Let's Talk Legal with Cecil Harvell with us today. Cecil, the second to die, I've heard this term many times before, and I'm going to take probably a little bit of a sidebar here, if I could. But in instances where you have an automobile accident and you have a husband and wife involved in the accident, and they both die. And I'm thinking about this in forms of the children and how this would be work its way through probate, as a matter of fact. I often hear that term, second to die. And
right.
What happens in an instance where the two principals
right.
die in an accident? How does that – and this has happened. What's
well,
the process?
Well, the North Carolina law, of course, addresses this. It's, you know, a presumption of survivorship is what mm-hmm. we legally call it, Lockwood. And the first thing that is looked at is that do the parties have a document, a last will and testament that addresses the presumption of survivorship?
Mm-hmm.
If you know, in a well-drafted last will and testament, it will particularly say that should a beneficiary and I die in a simultaneous tragedy, then it's going to be conclusively presumed that I predeceased the beneficiary, so that the assets will go ahead and pass according to the last will and testament to the first beneficiary. Then the first beneficiary then, of course, has died as well, and the assets then will pass according to their estate planning documents. So we first look at the document. If there is no document at all, then, of course, the North Carolina statutes begin to address this issue and give us direction on who would have been the first to die.
Oh, all right.
Yes.
Surprising.
So there's not a mystery about it. It is fixed by law, and then we would apply the law depending on those particular facts.
That's
known in the law as a presumption to survivorship. Now, the second to die, you say you've heard about that so much,
mm-hmm.
and I'm not surprised. A lot of times, that this is a real interesting twist. I'm glad it came up. Is that there's an insurance policy, Lockwood, that is sold very regularly by the insurance, life insurance uh-huh. industry, that is known as a second to die policy. And basically, it's a policy of insurance that says, well, Mom and I have bought a $250,000 policy, but it's going to pay out not just when Dad dies, but also when Mom dies. In other words, when the second party dies. And the reason for that is that folks think to themselves, well, that's when maybe the expenses would be. That's when I want to make sure that the estate is very fluid with money for the children to pay off any kind of mortgages or debt or business interests or anything of that nature. The premium on a second to die life insurance policy is less than the premium on a single insured, if you will, because a single insured is just one person, and so there's more risk that they might die.
Right.
A second to die, on the other hand, requires that there be two deaths. So the insurance industry, of course, got that figured out,
oh.
Of course, don't they, Lockwood?
And
yeah, they have that figured out, and so therefore the premium is less. But absolutely, the second to die is an issue that we deal with from time to time. But the answer to your question is that the North Carolina statutes will lead us to the conclusion in a tragedy, plane crash, car crash, these terrible, horrible things, mm-hmm. will lead us to a conclusion as to who was the first to die.
Now, is this the information, is this the decision that's made in probate, for example? And I, you know, we're talking about the mystery of probate. Mm-hmm. Where does the probate court work in this environment?
Well, the file of, let's say there were a common disaster, both files are opened, okay, because there have been two deaths after all. So right. There are two estates that are open. And the clerk of court will review to make sure that the presumption of survivorship statute is applied. So if someone gets off the track and starts saying, well, you know, the beneficiaries are the following, that might have to get corrected, because the presumption of survivorship statute says that, well, no, I'm sorry, you know, you were the first to die, and so the beneficiaries are different than what you have set forth initially in the estate file. Of course, Lockwood, a file that has those kinds of issues, as you would expect, would have a lawyer involved, right. and or lawyers involved, and they are going to more than likely, you know, read and follow the presumption of survivorship statute.
So recognizing how that all works, and of course this also applies to your opening remarks about the issue of a living trust, then what is the value of a living trust in that case? To your point earlier, obviously it was designed specifically, well, I shouldn't say designed specifically, but used in many instances to avoid or to simplify probate. I'll say avoid it. What then is the purpose of a living trust?
Well, the purpose that gets explained to folks and gets sold, if you will, at these seminars and luncheons and breakfasts and different things right. that these folks do for $2,500 later right. is basically to avoid probate. And that is unfortunate that they're sold that bill of goods in the state of North Carolina. There, as I said at the outset, there needs to be some other justifiable reason to go to the expense of creating a trust agreement other than just simply to avoid probate. Now, with that said, there are certainly times here comes a reason. Uh-huh. Let's say, for instance, Lockwood, that a client has some considerable assets, that the assets are kind of spread all over everywhere in different states. They own a property mm-hmm. in Florida. They have a home in, up in the Adirondacks of wherever, you know, Pennsylvania, or New York. They have a business interest that lingers from their time that they were living in New Jersey.
Right.
They just have a lot of different kinds of assets and in different states. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, it might be prudent to create a trust to transfer these various and sorted assets, Lockwood, because we don't want to necessarily have to open up an estate in each and every one of those states, Pennsylvania, New York, Florida, wherever the assets might be. So we title them in the name of a trust so that we are not having to necessarily open up an estate file in all of those different states. But Lockwood, there's the reason. There's the prong on the hat hanger that uh-huh. I hang my hat on.
Cecil Harvell with us this afternoon with Let's Talk Legal, Harvell and Collins. And I want to remind you that number, 252 area code 726-9050, 726-9050. Cecil, going back to this issue of the probate and the fact, the simplification of it and the benefit of being a resident in North Carolina, to your point a few moments ago, you were talking about the benefits of a living trust. And that was my next question as you introduced the sort of the description. We have a lot of people who have moved here, now made this as their permanent residence. However, they have property in multiple states, as you said a moment ago, trailing business interest, a company that they're in the process of unloading or selling. In other words, they've retired here, but they still have, if you will, an anchor in another state, Pennsylvania. We like to pick on them, New Jersey, Colorado, New York, California. And you said a moment ago, in the case of an untimely death, I would say any death is untimely, that suddenly you may have to open an estate in one of those other states, an estate issue. So
Lockwood, you absolutely would.
Wow.
Because, again, probate is the orderly transfer of, uh-huh. of an asset. If we have a home in Pennsylvania or, you know, a farm in Pennsylvania, or we have a business in Colorado, and we're here in North Carolina, how does Colorado know where that business
uh-huh,
goes?
Uh-huh.
How does the Register of Deeds in Pennsylvania know how to transfer, you know, that family farm that's out there in the foothills of Pennsylvania? They don't. And so we then are forced to file an ancillary estate in the state of Pennsylvania to transfer the title to that asset. And so you begin to see how the pieces of the puzzle fit together, Lockwood.
Uh-huh.
I mean, when a client comes in to speak with a good lawyer, the lawyer is going to ask questions about, you know, well, where are the lands that you own?
Right.
What are the businesses that you own? Sometimes, Lockwood, when I start asking those questions to a client, like, you know, where is your bank? You know, mm-hmm. do you own a property anywhere other than, you know, here in Morehead City? They look at me kind of like a little bit like on guard, a little
right.
bit like, why are you having to ask me all of this?
Uh-huh.
And of course, I just have to very politely, and try to be the gentleman that I am and say, well, you know, Mr. Jones, I need to know what the nature of your assets are in order to put the puzzles together to get a document that will, you know, most efficiently and from a cost perspective, help your family. And then maybe I need to make some few other examples of how this would come together. And then slowly but surely, they, of course, understand. I also, of course, am very quick to say, and I'm glad it came up on the radio program this afternoon, Lockwood, is that I say to the client, now, Mr. Jones, everything that you tell your lawyer is confidential.
Right, right.
And it's kept in the file, and the file is confidential, and we're not going to be able to release any information in your file to anyone other than to you.
Right.
And so usually after this conversation, we're comfortable again. But this is a good thing to say. If you go to a lawyer to have a last will and testament done, and the attorney doesn't ask you any questions about what you own, then you might want to consider going to a different attorney.
Right.
Because how can an attorney put together a well-drafted and conforming to your facts document if the lawyer doesn't have the facts? So the interview of the client is critical. And when a client is telling me, well, we still maintain, you know, our family home in Maine. We go up there in the summertime.
Uh-huh.
We live here in Beaufort, but we maintain our home in Maine. I still have an interest in a family business up
mm-hmm.
there. You know, then those are the ingredients that speak to me as a lawyer that say, well, we might want to talk to you now about this, quote, living trust. I don't call it a living trust, Lockwood, because the word living
right.
always seems to be the kissing cousin of avoid probate.
Right.
Okay. And I hate that because of all the things we've talked about already.
Well,
it's just simply a revocable trust agreement. And in it would be this property in Maine, and in it would be this business interest, LLC membership interest or corporate stock
mm-hmm.
in the business that lingers. And therefore, when this client were to pass on, there would be no requirement that there be an estate opened in the state of Maine.
Okay, I think that's an important aspect here. I want one other quick question before we wrap things up with you. And again, Cecil Harvell of Harvell and Collins. I focus on this for a moment, because you started off the program with the mystery of probate and the fact that North Carolina's probate process is very simplified, very cost-effective. It is not something to be feared, as you've pointed out numerous times. However, it is something to take advantage of at the same time. A real quick question, particularly in the case where you have, and we have a lot of retirees who still have assets in other states and other regions of the country. But the other quick question for you has to do with stock ownership, because quite often, of course, the stock is held in some facility other than at their home. In instances of stock and things of that nature, how does that treat it in probate here in North Carolina?
It is treated exactly. It's treated according to the law where the estate is open.
Okay. All right. So that would be, in this case, North Carolina. All right.
Correct.
I think this is a very important conversation. And for those who are listening, recognize if you have assets someplace else you would like to take advantage of the benefits of North Carolina law, definitely call Harvell and Collins. That's 252 area code 726-9050, 726-9050, or go online to harvellandcollins.com. That's spell out the word and, A-N-D, Harvell and Collins. As always, Cecil, very informative. I might add, it's a pleasure to be in class with you today. Thank you very much for your time.
Okay. Thank you, Lockwood. I enjoyed it as well. Take care.
Thank you. Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins.